Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades because the customer comes first. So they want to find you exactly the right insurance that you want. And they insure a wide spectrum. They'll find you insurance over a wide spectrum, personal, business, whatever it may be. And they'll also find you the best price. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Thought the Pirates made a couple of savvy moves over the weekend, getting George Contos from the Giants. Good middle reliever. Not great, not awesome, but good. Fills a role. And reacquiring Sean Rodriguez. His dad, Johnny, of course, was the manager for the last couple of years here in State College with the Spikes. Sean Rodriguez returned to the Pirates with an exclamation point last night.
162 hitter in 15 games with Atlanta. And hits a high drive to left field. There's no way he's done this. Left field, clear the deck. Cannonball coming. Serpico is back. Sean Rodriguez just won this ball game. I am not kidding. It's a 12-inning victory. And Sean Rodriguez just hit a home run to win this game. Raise the Jolly Roger, Serpico. What a comeback.
Greg Brown on the Pirates Radio Network as Sean Rodriguez electrifies everyone. Returning the Pirates, he had that awful, I mean awful, off-season crash where he and his family were the victims in the crash. They were not the cause of it. His wife and children were really hurt in it. Sean was hurt. And it took him a while just to come back. That's why you heard Greg mention, well, he's hitting 162. Well, after going through something like that, it just takes a while to get back. And then he returns to the Pirates and he hits the home run last night. Could not be happier for him. All right. On Saturday, it was media day at Beaver Stadium, and head football coach James Franklin addressed the media.
Obviously, we're in the thick of it right now. And, very, very busy. We just got done having meetings and walkthrough. And then we have the media responsibilities. And then we'll get a practice in this afternoon. So, I'm excited. I think we've had a great summer. There's been obvious improvement at a lot of positions from spring ball to now. The guys have really kind of worked hard and understood what they needed to work on. I think that's kind of a challenge nowadays is everybody wants to continue working on or practicing the things that they do well, and our guys were mature enough to identify areas of weaknesses individually and collectively as well that we needed to improve on, and I've seen that. You know, I think year two with Brent Pry running the defense and year two with Joe Moorhead running the offense has really, really helped us. On those sides of the ball, and then obviously returning the punter and the kicker, the caliber of Blake Gillikin and Tyler, I think has helped us from a leadership perspective on special teams as well. So we're in a good place. We got a lot of work to do. We took a nice step last year, but we still got a lot of steps in every area that you could possibly imagine to continue in the direction that we want to go. So really appreciate everybody being here and open up to questions.
Raise your hand and we'll get a mic to you. We've got a mic on each side.
Hey, James.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Really good.
Good. Is there anything different that you tell a team coming back from like an 11-3 season that you would tell a team coming back from a 7-6 season?
No, I think you guys have probably heard me talk about this enough all off season is, I'd make the opposite argument that, you need to stay consistent with your plan. You need to stay consistent with your message. We do the same thing all year long. I make the argument, whether you're, no different than we do week to week, whether we're playing a conference game or out of conference game or what outsiders would perceive as a big game, compared to, a different type of game. It's the same thing with seasons. Last year's success or last year's record should not impact us. And I'm challenging everybody in our organization to go back to day one as if they've never heard the offense, defense, or special teams installed. That's the players as well, because the reality is if we can get 1% better in the way we take notes in meetings, that's going to help. If we can be 1% better in how we sleep, our nutrition, our hydration, how we take care of our bodies, that's going to help. So just kind of growing in every area, and I would make the argument it's probably going to have a more dramatic impact because everybody focuses on the X's and O's. Everybody focuses on the bench press. Everybody focuses on the schemes. So, you know, if we can do a better job than anybody in the country in focusing in those other areas, treatment, hydration, nutrition, you know, sleep, note-taking, you know, those types of things, discipline, then I think it can have a really big impact. And those 1% in each one of those areas, they add up. So our message isn't going to change. It never will, to be honest with you. Obviously, we learned from last year's experiences, and it was helpful from a growth perspective and from a maturity perspective. But last year's last year, and this year's this year. And we want to take all those experiences and maturity that we gained from last year and then continue growing and evolving.
Good morning, James.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Good, thanks. You?
Really good.
Thank you. The secondary, how do you see the secondary panning out this year? And can you give us any indication on whether John Reed will play? And if not, who will fill that responsibility at his side?
Yeah, I'm really pleased and excited, you know, with what we got going right now in the secondary. You know, obviously Marcus Allen's played a bunch of football for us. You know, a guy that I think is going to have a huge year for us is Apke. You know, guy's played a bunch of football now for us, hasn't really been the guy yet, and has a chance to kind of step into that role. Aaron Monroe's done a nice job as well. And it's fighting for time and for reps and for a more significant role. Nick is doing the same thing. Nick Scott is doing the same thing. So, you know, we're starting to get into a better situation there from a depth. And there's a bunch of other guys I could name, but those four guys for right now. And then at the corner position, you know, you could make the argument there's, you know, five or six guys that we feel good about. Grant and Christian have played a lot of football for us, you know, since they stepped on campus, and they're continuing to grow. McPherson is a guy that's had a really, really good offseason. You know, Zeke McPherson had a really good offseason, and, you know, we're excited about him. Amani has played a lot of football for us as well and brings a lot of maturity and size and length there for us. Obviously, there was a lot of excitement about Wade this spring, and he's had a nice offseason as well and is continuing to grow. And then, you know, Castro Fields is probably a guy that there's as much buzz about as any of the newcomers right now. So, you know, he's a guy that, you know, of the freshmen that I think right away is kind of, you know, making an argument that he's gonna have to factor in. Anybody miss Chris? John is in Portland, Oregon, doing an internship at Intel. I actually had the opportunity to do the internship last year and just didn't feel comfortable making it work with his football responsibilities, so he had accepted that internship this summer. And then based on, obviously, you know, some of the challenges that he has right now, he's able to stay and you know, kind of maximize that opportunity. So we'll be really excited when he gets back because of his leadership and his knowledge. It's amazing. I mean, our guys can get on the computer, as you guys know, on their laptops and watch the tape, you know, like 20 minutes after practice. It's downloaded. And they don't have to be here to do that. So I found out 3 days ago that every night John Reed is sitting in his hotel room or his apartment or whatever it is, watching all the tape and texting Terry and calling Terry and texting the players and calling the players saying, hey, you know, you did this in Zorro coverage, or you did that. Why are we teaching it differently right now? Or is he not using the technique that we want? I mean, you know, so John's going to have a huge impact for us this year. You know, we'll see how it plays out. But either way, he's going to have a huge impact.
James, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Wonderful. You?
I'm well. Thank you.
James, 2 weeks ago in Chicago, you said that Andrew Nelson and Brendan Mann would be available for the start of preseason camp. How have they looked so far? When do you hope to settle the offensive line going into the season?
Yeah, they've looked good. I mean, all of our guys that have had challenges that we're working through, it's not like, you know, the doc said this the other day, which I thought was a pretty good, you know, analogy, is you don't go from not running at all to running a marathon. You know, you kind of work your way back into it. And, you know, that's what those guys are doing. So, you know, they've looked good. I think, you know, when you got guys like that are, you know, seniors, redshirt seniors, have played a lot of football, they got a lot of maturity, you know, so if you're going to have a guy that maybe is a little limited in terms of, they're not limited anywhere physically, but we're limited in the reps, again, like I said, because you don't go from, you know, not running at all to run a marathon. There are probably guys that could handle that situation the best, and you know, they've done a good job with it. They look great. They're able, when they get in there, they've done a really good job. You know, they're able to run, they're able to move, they're powerful, they're physical, you know, so it's been good for us. But, you know, it's not like they're taking the full amount of reps that the rest of the ones are. Yeah, I think you hope to settle the offensive line, or, you know, when you're in a quarterback competition or any of these different positions, as soon as you possibly can. That's always the scenario. But, you know, at the end of the day, the most important thing is let's identify the best five, get them on the field. And, you know, I think your point is a good one, is how long, you know, at that position, how much time do you need to really build that chemistry up with each other? I think last year, though, you know, we played, I think it was 7 different combinations on the offensive line. And one of the things that I think we've done a fairly good job of is not recruiting one position players. So I think Bates is a really good example of that, as a guy that could play center, a guy that could play guard, a guy that could play tackle. You know, we want to recruit true tackles, and tackles could slide down inside and play guard if you had to. But if you recruit too many guys that can only play center and guard, they're kind of, you know, sawed off, kind of short-limbed guys. You know, it eliminates flexibility. So recruiting swing guys inside that are probably more guard center body types, but have enough length like Bates that could move out to the tackle if you had to. So I think that helps us, is recruiting guys that can play multiple positions across the line to create flexibility that allows Matt to get the best five on the field. So hopefully sooner rather than later, so those guys can, you know, build a tremendous amount of chemistry together.
Hey, James. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Awesome. We've seen a lot of Trace and Tommy, obviously. What can you tell us about the development of Jake and in the limited time he's been here, Sean Clifford?
Yeah, I would say that's probably one of the more interesting storylines for us as coaches, maybe not you guys as media members or the fans, but is who's the number three? Yeah. Good, valid point. But I guess what I'm saying is that's probably one of the more important things on my mind and on my plate, is who's the number three, you know. You know, and then I think we could get into a situation possibly kind of like we did with Trace, where your number three, say your number three ends up being Jake. Okay, fine. Then you're in a situation where you could redshirt Clifford. Okay, that's wonderful. Well, what if Clifford ends up being number three? You know, so if you get in a situation where you get an opportunity to get your number three in the game, we may do what we did with Trace, where we actually put the number four guy in the game to maybe be able to redshirt the other guy, depending on how that thing plays out. But, you know, that's an important battle for us. I think, you know, we feel really good about our number one and our number two and what they're going to be able to do for us this year. I think one of the things that's kind of interesting in our program, and I think the quarterback position is an example of that, is when we were at 65 scholarships, there was a struggle, a challenge that we had, is a lot of walk-ons were playing significant roles on the team, and a lot of walk-ons were being put on scholarship. And we felt like that was normal. So there became a little bit of an expectation of that. That's how it is, but that's not normal. So that was a challenge for us, you know, in terms of locker room dynamics and things like that. Well, I think we're also in a similar situation now, where guys felt like what we had been going through the last couple of years was normal. And what I mean by that is Miles Diefenbach, the story I always tell that Miles told me is when he got here as a true freshman, he was fifth team on the offensive line and didn't get one rep in practice his entire freshman year. You know, and then since we've been here, the guys showed up and they were in the two deep right away. And some guys were forced to play or whatever. And now we're in a situation where guys that redshirted last year, they have seen the evolution, and they're saying to themselves, well, all the redshirt freshmen the next year have huge roles. Well, that's not necessarily the case anymore. You know, you got to come in and you got to earn those roles. So it's an interesting dynamic, and I think that's a little bit kind of what we have at quarterback and a lot of different positions. Guys are going to have to learn to be a little bit patient. There's going to be some guys that are going to be able to come in and impact right away, and there's going to be some guys that are going to be able to sit and be able to learn. You know, I was in Green Bay, and we had Brett Favre, and we drafted Aaron Rodgers that year. And I think, you know, one of the best things for him is he was able to sit and take his time of learning the NFL game and sitting behind, Brett for a couple years. So when he was able to step in there, he was ready. So, you know, it's an evolution kind of in our organization, in our locker room, of how this is playing out. But I think, you know, your question is an excellent one, because that's my concern as well, as figuring out who the number three is as quickly as possible. And I think it's going to be a battle. You know, Jake is doing some really nice things, and so is Sean.
So along this line of questioning with competition, how do you handle the depth chart with the guys? I know you want to create that, but this time of year, do you announce it? Do you obviously it's a reward for the guys that are playing well, and how do you handle that with the players when a depth chart is either released or you're thinking about it?
I think it's another good question, because we literally just talked about that this morning, and how I want to approach it this year is, well, first of all, it's not like we ever post a depth chart anywhere. I just let the position coaches kind of handle that kind of on their own. The only one I will get involved with is in the quarterback position. Like last year, me and Joe sat down with the quarterbacks and brought them in and had a discussion about it. But besides that, the I want the position coaches to be the head coach of their position and handle that. But what I did say is, come Sunday, I want an updated depth chart that we can go over as a staff, offense, defense, and special teams. And I want that depth chart to reflect, if we were playing a game on Saturday, who would be the guys that we're getting reps, and what's the order of it. And I want to communicate that to the players. So I want the players to know, you know, right after this week, if the number three guy just beat you out, and you were the number two guy, and you're no longer that guy, I don't want it to be a subtle thing in practice where you've noticed one or two reps that guy's starting to get more of. No, he beat you out, and you know that, so now you have the opportunity to fix that before the first game. You know, so you clearly know where you stand week in and week out. And I think that's really important. I think it's going to magnify the competition. I think it's going to give the players, you know, really good, honest feedback of where they're at. And that's something that I've always believed in professionally. When I was an assistant, now as a head coach, I want to know right away. I always hate and still do the HR meeting that you have at the end of the year, where your boss tells you all year long you've been doing all these things wrong. Don't wait to the end of the year to tell me. Tell me now, so I have an opportunity to fix them. And that's what we want. You know, I want, with my staff and with the players, I want them, you know, to get immediate feedback so they have an opportunity to fix what we think is a problem or an issue. You know, so I think that's gonna spike the competition level up a little bit, like I heard in the past around here, where the guys that have been covering Penn State for a long time, when there was like 75 different jerseys at practice, first team wore one color, second team wore another color, third team wore a different color. Like when I came here and I walked down the locker room, there was like 55 different jersey colors. Now, you guys were never allowed at practice, so you probably even know what I'm talking about, but my point is that instant feedback that they used to get back in the day. You'd walk to your locker and your jersey color had just changed. You've gone from first team to second team. And we're going to do the same thing by week, but more from a depth chart perspective.
James, right here in the middle. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. What would you say is the biggest challenge the team faces after the success from last season? And second question for you, is there any update you can give on Damian Barber trying to get to campus?
Yeah, we're confident, that Damian's going to be here. We got some great feedback this week, so we're really confident that Damian will be here. The problem is that once you set your 105 by the NCAA rule, it's not like you can pull a guy off of it and sub a guy in. It's not like, the NFL where you're getting on the waiver wires and, changing guys. So, we have some challenges when it comes to that. But most important thing is will he be here before school starts? And we're pretty confident that will happen. Yes, sir. And then the first question was,
what would you say is the biggest challenge the team faces? Yeah.
Yeah, I think kind of what you talked about, and I think we've been talking about all offseason, is not spending a whole lot of time talking about what you just did, which is the success of last season everybody wants to talk about. We've talked about it enough. The fans have talked about it. The media has talked about it. We've talked about it as an organization. They've been given rings. We've talked about it enough. So that's behind us. We have moved on. And trust me, we have talked about that in great detail with our players. But, again, let's not, it's not like I'm asking them to bury their head in the sand and act like that didn't happen. They earned that. So, recognize that. But on the other hand, those points aren't going to carry over and those wins aren't going to carry over. And we had guys that had critical roles on that team that are no longer with us anymore. So, we just have to be disciplined enough not to get caught up in the hype. I actually make the argument the way last season started really, really helped me at the end of the year to say, listen, you can't listen to the praise now, no different than I didn't want you to talk about the criticism. I didn't want you to listen to the criticism early on.
That's James Franklin, the head football coach of the Nittany Lions, part of, in fact, the vast majority of his press conference from Saturday. Coming up, R.J. Anderson from CBS Sports is going to join us. And, of course, news first here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served the Valley for decades. They have found the right insurance that fits your needs, and they've done it for the best price. That's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And from CBS Sports, the outstanding R.J. Anderson joins us. R.J., thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Obviously, this has been one of those tough days in Major League Baseball. Darren Dalton in our area was revered by fans, and then Don Baylor is somebody that carved out a great legacy over a long career as both a player and a manager. Let's start with Darren Dalton. When you look back at a guy that probably might have been the heart and soul of that 93 Phillies team, what did you see in Darren Dalton?
Well, as you mentioned, he was very well liked by fans and teammates alike, and he was a pretty good player as well, in addition to being a positive influence in the clubhouse and in the dugout. I believe he made 3 All-Star teams, and he was a member of a few World Series winning clubs, and he was just a good catcher, and somehow he did it with all those knee injuries. So it was pretty impressive, and it's unfortunate anytime someone passes away as young as he did, let alone after battling brain cancer for, I believe, 4 years.
Only 55 years old, and then there's Don Baylor, 68, former American League MVP, Orioles, Angels, Red Sox were his 3 primary teams he managed. What was the legacy of Don Baylor?
Well, I think the thing everyone will remember about Don Baylor is that he got hit by a lot of pitches. And if you look at
his
career, he had a lot of bruises to show for his work. And if you look at the career ranks, he's still 4th all-time, which is pretty impressive, all things considered. But you're right, Baylor was a much better player than just being known for getting hit with what baseball suggests. And he was an MVP. He made the All-Star team once, and he went on to have a lengthy career after playing as not only the manager of the Rockies and Cubs, but also as a hitting coach for a handful of teams and as the New York Mets bench coach for two seasons. So he really had a long life in baseball. And again, it's sad to see him pass away due to cancer at a relatively young age.
Also, let's get to what's going on right now. The Yankees made the big move. They got Sonny Gray. Certain teams didn't have to make moves like that, such as the Indians, who kept a Corey Kluber. They went head-to-head the other night. And as I was driving to Erie to do a speaking engagement for Penn State football, I listened to Tom Hamilton's broadcast. Talk about the dynamics of those two teams, the Indians and the Yankees, right now.
Yeah, so the Yankees actually made a couple of deadline deals. In addition to getting Gray, they went out and traded for Jaime Garcia. And earlier in the month, they acquired Todd Frazier, David Robinson, and David Canely from the White Sox in a bigger deal. And basically, the Yankees were trying to shore up their pitching staff in advance of the postseason, whereas the Indians, their big deal was going out and getting Joe Smith from the Blue Jays, and that's relatively minor, all things considered. Basically, the Yankees were loading up to try and get back to the postseason for the first time in a couple years, whereas the Indians, you know, they're comfortable with the roster they have in place. They're going to get a couple of players back from the disabled list, including Jason Kipnis, who was activated yesterday. And, you know, you don't want to say that the Indians are complacent or comfortable in the sense that they don't think they can be dethroned in the AL Central, but that's a pretty good team, and you have to think their best baseball is ahead, whereas the Yankees are, frankly, a year early to the party, and they're just trying to do the best they can, not only to reach the postseason, but to overtake Boston and win the division after their great start to the season.
Yeah, Boston made the one move, got Addison Reed. Well, they got Nunez, too, obviously, from the Giants. But last year they brought up Benintendi. This year it's Rafael Devers. They seem to have improved themselves from within the last couple of years. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. And, you know, Ben Cherington gets a lot of grief because he didn't go out there and make a big trade for the most part. However, where would this Red Sox team be if they had traded Bogarts or Betts or, you know, even Benintendi and now Devers? So credit to the former regime for acquiring and developing these players, and credit to Dombrowski, even though he's traded some prospects in recent years since taking over Boston, including, you know, Anderson Espinosa, who was a big deal out in San Diego before he had to undergo Tommy John surgery. But credit to Dombrowski for holding on to enough of these talented youngsters to fill his 25-man roster with these types, these youngsters who can come up mid-season or later on in the year and fill a hole. And, you know, even if they don't stick on Boston's 25-man roster, you saw this past offseason, how they can be used to acquire a guy like Chris Sale. So, you know, a farm system is there to help you win, and it can do that either by internal promotions or by going outside the organization and acquiring a veteran player, and Boston has done it pretty well the last few years.
And Houston has been able to get to this point because of the great job they've done with their farm system. I know it starts here in the New York Penn League around here. I see Tri-City often enough where you're like, they have a lot of prospects. But Dallas Keuchel was outspoken that they didn't make moves at the deadline. Does Dallas Keuchel have a point?
Yeah, absolutely, he has a point. You know, Houston's obviously going to win the American League West, and they have the best record in the American League for a reason. However, that roster is dealing with a lot of injury issues right now. And you look at the rotation, and beyond Keuchel, it's really hard to bet on any of these guys either staying healthy or staying productive. McCullers is on the disabled list. You know, in the group after that, Morton and Fires and who have you, they're all kind of question marks for various reasons. And it was a little disappointing to me that Houston's only move was to go out and acquire Francisco Liriano. And I know they have in mind that he can move to the bullpen and maybe become their Andrew Miller type, who is just dominant. But for my money, I feel like if I'm in their position where they have such a loaded team and, you know, they're going to make the postseason, going to have home field advantage and whatnot, I would have preferred to go out there and get a guy who was already experienced in this left-handed specialist role, like a Jerry Blevins from the Mets. And that way, if Liriano doesn't take well to pitching out of the bullpen, because remember, he has limited experience there. Even this season, he hasn't pitched well, but he's been a starter. And going to the bullpen, you know, it's not a sure thing. Some of these pitchers do not take well to having to warm up consistently or not knowing quite when they're going into a game. And I don't know, I just feel like that's a risky move for a team that frankly didn't really need to take that risk. And I understand where Dallas Keuchel is coming from. Houston's very good. They have a chance to represent the American League in the World Series, but yeah, why not take your shot while you can and go out there and at minimum get someone who is comfortable with the role you're asking the player to perform in.
This was to be a big weekend in Philadelphia with Pete Rose entering in the Wall of Fame ceremony in Philadelphia. It's not going to happen. There are moments over the last, since 1989, where there's been some sympathy toward Rose along the way, yet along the way he also can't really seem to get out of his own way. How do you view Pete Rose, and what do you think Fox Sports needs to do with Pete Rose?
I don't think Rose should have been on TV to begin with, honestly. I mean, look, the allegations about betting on baseball are minor compared to the statutory rape allegations that surfaced last week. And
right.
If you're the Phillies, I'm not even really sure why the Phillies felt they needed to honor him, because, you know, he was there for, I believe, 5 seasons, and while he was productive, it's not like his relationship with Cincinnati, where he'd been there, you know, what, 14 years or what have you. So I'm a little confused by that. And, yeah, I mean, for my money, Rose doesn't even add enough on TV for Fox Sports to retain him in the first place before these allegations arose. It's not like he's Alex Rodriguez, where, you know, whatever baggage he comes with is perhaps easier to overshadow with his great analysis and insight. To me, Rose had become a bit of a character on TV, and once you hit that point, I mean, he's not going to change. You know, he is what he is in terms of a television personality. So just based on his performance on TV, I figured Fox Sports would move on. But, you know, these new allegations are very concerning, and they should take them very seriously. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's off the broadcast by the time, you know, the weekend or next weekend rolls around.
I have to ask you about the Arizona situation. I think people look at the Arizona Diamondbacks as still a relatively new franchise, which they are, although they've been around, you know, more than 2 decades now. They're in Tampa Bay. They play in the Dome Stadium, so a lot of people are going to assume Chase Field's a pretty good place to play. Yet there's a reality to it that those of us from the outside don't realize looking in. Chase Field's become a problem for the league, hasn't it?
Yeah, so the latest on that is basically the Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball are upset because the local government won't pay for some repairs to burst pipes and to an air conditioning unit that also flooded the stadium there. And there's some back and forth on who exactly is responsible for that. And the bottom line is Major League Baseball and the Arizona Diamondbacks just want the government to fork over more money so they don't have to, in order to fix the stadium. And there's some looming, I should put it this way, there are hints of a looming battle coming up on whether Major League Baseball will threaten to move the Diamondbacks from Phoenix if the local government does not resolve this by paying up. And, you know, the bottom line is this is business as usual for the most part. Major League Baseball and whatever team we're talking about always want the government, the taxpayers, to fork over more money so the owners can pocket more of the revenues without having to pay for their own stadiums, without having to pay for their own stadium upgrades or repairs or what have you. So this is really just a more publicized version of whatever's happening across the league. You know, for instance, Oakland, they have septic pipe problems all the time. They're trying to get a new ballpark, and they use that as leverage against the local government. Same in St. Pete with the Rays. I don't think they have anything quite this specific in terms of, you know, flooding and the stadium or what have you. But, you know, these teams are going to use whatever they can in order to get more and more of the stadium finances picked up, and that leaves more and more money in the pockets of the owners.
Well, then let me ask you this. In your opinion, what viable markets are there out there for Major League Baseball beyond the 30 we have right now? What's your opinion on that?
Everyone always talks about a return to Montreal, but honestly, I think they're just being used as a decoy. You know, that's like in the NHL or whatever sport. You know how Las Vegas always came up? Well, I don't think Major League Baseball is going to move a team to Las Vegas, but I think you see it. I think it's just like that, whereas, you know, Major League Baseball is going to continue to float the specter of Montreal until both of these teams' markets pony up for the new stadium, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're never going to talk about expanding to Montreal. I know there's always been talk about Charlotte or maybe even expanding internationally to Mexico, but I don't think any of that's horribly likely. So I think you're going to continue to see Montreal be the one that's mentioned the most. And, you know, there were reports, I think, 2 years ago about how the Rays were even considering Montreal and had financed some studies on the viability of that and whatnot. But realistically, I think that you're going to not see any of these teams move, because if you look at last, I believe it's like 30 to 40 years, there's been exactly one team who has moved, or relocated, I should say, across state lines, and that was the Montreal Expos. And you can blame it on the ownership group there, and that's deservedly so, but, you know, I just don't see it likely that any of these teams move outside of the state lines. And I think you're going to see resolution on the Tampa Bay and Oakland fronts in the coming years. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be a raw deal for the taxpayers in those areas.
RJ, an absolute pleasure. I hope it's not the last time we talk with you. Appreciate all the information and the conversation very much.
Thank you for having me.
RJ Anderson does a great job for CBS Sports covering Major League Baseball. We'll come back, wrap up the show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word: Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Great to be with you. Thanks for being with us today. I hope we thank you enough on this show. Whether you're listening in a car, at home, at work, whatever it may be, okay, please. Thanks so much. We can't thank you enough for listening and being a part of the show. You know, it's tough. The Darren Dalton thing's tough. I mean, that's a long, long road. Brain cancer. I mean, he just was loved by the fans. I mean, was a great catcher in his own right. I mean, you know, period of time.
And very young.
Was the leader of that team, only 55?
Yeah, very young.
Thank goodness. Don Baylor was 68. He died of cancer.
And even that's young. 68's even young.
Yeah, it sure is. So, I mean, that's the tough part of this. Football-wise, back to work today. They had yesterday off. They're back to work today. 6 more days of practice coming up this week. And so far, things have gone fairly well, as you heard James Franklin say. They like where they are. When you're sitting there and you're talking about, gee, we wonder who our third-team quarterback is, that's a tip-off that things are so far where you want them to be. They are obviously a good football team. But every week is going to be the kind of week where no matter what, the focus is going to be completely on Penn State, and it should be, every week, because they've earned that spot. They've earned the spot to be in. And I think the point that he made during the press conference is exactly one of the key points when you're doing all this. And that is, just don't pay attention to the noise around you. It's not easy to do in today's environment between newspapers, online, blogs, talk shows, things like that. It's not easy to do if there's so much noise around you. But just like you should ignore the negative comments, because the negative comments can... They cause you to think too much. Just like you need to ignore that and get your advice on what you should and should not be doing from your coaching staff and your teammates. Same thing goes with praise. You need to ignore that as well. That can be poisons. You sit there and you start to believe, hey, you know, I'm pretty good. you need to get in with that focus that you need to keep working on everything that you do well and then zero in on something that can make you better. Because your reputation is not going to get you anywhere because they're going to want to tag you. That's where your reputation is going to get. You're just going to have to go out and be better than they are. Look, and Penn State already goes in with a big name to begin with. Now, in this era of the college football playoff, they go out there every week with a target on them. Okay, fine. Embrace it. It is much better to be the one walking around with the target, because that must mean you're good, than it is to be the hunter.
So you think expectations it's not a problem? You think it's better to have expectations than to not?
Well, I mean, having no expectations means that there's a good chance that you might not be that great. Okay? I mean, if you have expectations going in, fine. That's great. I mean, I'm out there now doing a little mini talking circuit here. I was in Erie the other night. The people there were awesome. I was in Williamsport Thursday night. The people there were awesome. And these are just much more fun conversations for me with people. Talking about a good football team with an excellent coach and great kids. And not having to talk about problems. You know, after a while, I mean, I'm doing the same thing I've done every year, going out and speaking at various places. Hey, after a while, you know how sick you get sick of talking about problems? I'd rather go out and talk about some good stuff. Well, I've got a lot of good stuff to talk about. I'd rather do that.